Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Indeed, this is the Point Taken podcast on iTunes, on Google Play, or just on your web browser at sportsnet.ca/590. And let's call it episode 20, because I'm not sure if I did 2 weeks or it just felt like more than two to the listener without her. But Carolyn Cameron has indeed safely returned that we're aware of. There wasn't any.
Same. Not that I'm aware of.
No
either.
Illnesses. No shellfish.
Knock on substitute wood. I'm feeling good. I didn't know if you'd replace me already.
Not at all.
No.
Now you were. But I also don't get to take 2 weeks in the middle of the fall. I don't know what kind of operation they're running on the television side. If I tried to take 2 days, the place would fall apart.
Yeah, but everyone took vacation in the summer. And someone's got to work when everyone has taken vacation in the summer. So I thought, okay, I'll take my vacation after everyone's done taking theirs.
And I think
that's how unselfish I am, Craig.
My guess is with your wide web of tennis acumen and contacts that you somehow turn a vacation in New York City into some work days.
Yeah.
I feel like you did.
I didn't purposely do that, though. That's just how it
how it landed. And you can you tell? Now, I mentioned this last week. I'm like, gee, I don't know. You know, privacy is important in these days, and Carolyn's away for a couple weeks. Maybe I shouldn't say much about where she is. And then
gave the address.
And then I turn on Sportsnet Central one night, and Eric Thomas is showing an Instagram picture on a national sports broadcast of you on vacation.
They were probably making fun of me.
They might have been. The sound was down. But I sometimes watch it with the sound up. You're standing on a rock somewhere warm, and I'm like, okay, this privacy thing, I may be overemphasizing this. If they're promoting the fact you're somewhere sunny and hot in September or October.
I can almost bet the way that we work at night and our relationships at work that they were undoubtedly I was definitely the punchline of whatever was happening there. I'm going to need to go back in the system or figure out how to and see what was going on there.
And what do you want to say about it? About your vacation?
It was a very nice, relaxing vacation. I did some surfing, which is fun.
Was that a first?
And as I always say, though, with surfing, is it's better exercise to attempt to surf than to actually surf. It's better exercise to get beat up by the ocean.
The first thought I have with surfing is sharks, but that's silly, right? There's only surfboards and so many incidents.
Yeah, sure. Again, I got home safe. No, it was a very nice vacation. But then I came back. I mean, when I was gone, that's when it was 40 degrees in
Toronto. It was really nice.
And then even Thanksgiving weekend was so warm. And I'm one of those people who over Thanksgiving I was thinking and saying, oh, this is lovely weather. This is nice. I mean, it feels like summer. But I don't know, when I'm eating pumpkin pie, I want it to feel cooler. I want it to feel cold. And then a day later, bam, fall has hit. And then I think, what on earth was I thinking? I want summer back.
But that's baseball playoff weather. That's midseason NFL weather. That's start of hockey season weather. We're going to talk to David Amber today about Hockey Night in Canada. And you feel weird. I went in this sounds like our podcast should get some really elite sponsors, really privileged sponsors. I went swimming in my pool Thanksgiving day. And I'll never get to do that again. Well, the world, the earth is getting warmer. So I'll get to swim in 10 years on American Thanksgiving.
Right.
In my pool. Now, I did have to heat it, but that's not the point. The point is usually you'd think about clothing. And now I'm like, I got to call and get it closed down. I'm not saying that. That's not a first world problem. I'm just telling you something I have to do agenda.
I'll remind you when we finish recording the podcast.
Later in the week. But you're right. On Thanksgiving afternoon we had a Thanksgiving lunch, as it were, a late lunch. Because I had to do the show in the morning. And I missed my nap. I had to participate
how
and be social, but then I thought I'll wake myself up around 3:30. Baseball playoff game, and I swam after.
So
I
you swam instead of napping.
Well, yeah, I went to it was a show, gym, big lunch, pumpkin, and then I swam, and then I think I had a piece of pumpkin pie after I swam because I didn't want to. You know what they say about swimming and eating.
Half an hour. You got to wait half an hour.
I thought it was
15
minutes.
You got to wait.
Has it changed? Is half an hour the new 15 minutes?
I don't know. I think as adults, we should be able to just play it by ear. Go by feel.
Now, I missed, although I noticed from time to time in Hawaii.
Yeah.
at what hotel? And you were weighing in. You would weigh. There would be some weigh-ins on Twitter. Now
there were some. I can't shut my mouth for too long.
There were some, you know, Roger Federer tweet likes, but there were also some very important observations. And there was a moment. And I don't ask you this because you are female, because I had an opinion on it.
Sure.
And I have a wife that's a sports writer, so she had an opinion on it. So everybody had a thought on Cam Newton a week ago Wednesday.
Yeah.
He tried to pass this off as sarcasm. I thought he did something that was degrading. I thought he did something that was discriminatory to a female beat reporter who covers the Panthers for the Charlotte Observer. And what I thought was, before I get your thought, is not, I almost get when an athlete lashes out, and we've been in those spots where you got asked tough questions at a tough time and someone's just lost something important, or someone might lose their job, or a manager might get fired. But Cam's in a good place. Cam had just beaten the New England Patriots. The Panthers are rolling. He played his best game of the season. I was really surprised, and that made it me feel angrier at Cam, because I thought, you're not feeling backed up against the wall with this question. You're being really rude and degrading and sexist without feeling heat somehow. Because we all lash out, and we shouldn't. But I didn't have any excuse for Cam doing this on a day that should have been good, talking about a great game that had just happened. That's my thought.
There was no excuse for what he said, and I'm not personally offended as a female sports broadcaster. I just think he's an idiot for what he said. And then, sure, there's the apology that comes out, but that those apologies come out, and he has to apologize, but those apologies come out because that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do PR-wise. So, I mean, I've lost respect for him. It's just stupid. Like, just keep your mouth shut.
Can a 28-year-old man learn and evolve and end up getting better after a scenario like that?
I hope so.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't know him personally, right?
Yeah.
So that's where the apology, you do have to, you take it for what it is, in my opinion. For me, it's more, how does he go on now and how does he act now? The thing, too, that I found interesting was the reporter she tweeted to after that, about how she did go and confront him and go talk to him, and that experience was bad.
And he still didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's
still...
So to
me, that's all you really need to know.
Yeah, it was a bad experience. It was.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, when you hear stuff like that, it's just...
But I hate passing it off as immaturity, because that's not... You're 28. You're not a kid anymore.
That is not an excuse. I hate that when they use that excuse.
That's not an immaturity thing.
No.
You don't just suddenly, you know...
It's an ignorance thing.
Right. And there are always moments, and I always feel like this, where there's snap of a finger moments where I in my own life realize something, and I'm like, how I talked 8 years ago, I wouldn't say things now.
Yeah.
I've said that to my parents about...
We all say things.
And even my parents, who are very... I think they are rather liberal, but I said to them even about a subject like gay marriage, I said, if you guys are sitting around having a conversation about two women marrying or two men in 1978 and you're at a dinner party, is there anybody that thinks they would be for it? And no, but that's called evolution. That's where we're getting somewhere as a society, where we're looking at things we did in the past and thinking we weren't as evolved as we could be now. And Do we go to extremes? Do we put people in boxes and then say, we're going to hold this against you for the rest of your existence? And does this happen a lot on social media? I'd say yeah. I'd say maybe too much. But the Cam thing landed very wrong with me. I didn't think the league should have done anything. I don't think you can suspend somebody for being obnoxious and immature. But it was a really, really bad look for a star athlete in a league.
Yeah,
it just was.
It was dumb. It made him look awful. And it was, as I said, and maybe it sounds rude, but I just thought it was idiotic. So.
And I'd say this, if we're on a great path, and I think we are, we're on a much better path to equality in sports media than where we were before, then I'm going to treat you as equals. And I would say, if you are a man and you ask a bad question, I don't mind an athlete
Absolutely.
Calling you out. For, and
yeah,
if you're a female, same thing.
Same thing.
Like if
it goes both ways.
If you ask, if Mike Babcock gets asked a bad question by by someone, by Chris Johnson, which wouldn't happen. But if he does, I want him to treat him the same way Kristen Shilton will. But people are it's dangerous to do because someone will be like, hey, he really went in on that female. She's just a reporter. You don't even have to call her a female reporter. My wife's done it. You've done it. I've done it. We've all had questions. We're oh, God, this is going badly. Yeah, well, it's coming out of my mouth at the same time. And some people are more gentle with us than others. But
it's that Cam Newton said it's interesting to hear a female talk about routes. And that's it. You don't need to label it. I wish I should have tried to pull it up. But someone tweeted out, I don't know if it was, I think it was a crime reporter. And she said, I'm able to be a crime reporter. Not once has anyone suggested I can't do it because I've never stolen a laptop. You know? I mean, aren't we over this?
And I'd say of all the sports, there's value. Like when we had Jesse Levine on the podcast, who you'd done work with as an analyst for tennis. And I'd say his experience is valuable. It's helpful that he's played.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean the playing thing is important when we have people on to talk about the playing.
Yeah.
But I've never put pads on and I've never played high school football. And I'm not going to be defiant and challenge people who have.
No, but we can report on it.
Right.
That's
and I've
our
watched
job.
Enough to if you've got a historical context, I'm sure it irks you if a male or female ascends to a certain level and you know they're faking it or you know they haven't done the homework and they're not doing the work to keep up and they have a job either because of their name or because of their looks. And again, that's male or female. It should be a very level playing field.
I don't care what you look like. I don't care who you are. If you work hard and you're good at your job, that's where you find the respect. As I always like to say, it's better to be respected than liked.
Interesting.
Now, Cam Newton is neither right now in my books.
Yeah. But. No, he'd have work to do to earn back the approval of some people. And I'm sure you would have stopped purchasing Oikos yogurt from Dannon had they kept him as a spokesperson. You may have gone another route with your yogurt consumption had they not cut ties.
Interesting choice of words.
It is an interesting choice of words. We're very excited. We're going to talk to Dave and Amber from Hockey Night in Canada. You made it back just in time from your tropical exploits for the first week of Hockey Night in Canada. That would have been just a shame to miss that. You probably scheduled it that way on purpose.
No, I didn't. Isn't it nice, though, to... I was thinking on Saturday night, and that's where the great weather, out on a patio watching Hockey Night, it just... Saturdays feel whole again. And we were saying before we were recording the podcast, too, there's good hockey to watch. You know, it's fast, it's skilled.
Don't jinx it.
No, but...
Don't send it back to 2 years ago.
Okay. You know him as the host of Hockey Night in Canada. We saw him on Saturday for the first time this season. Well, officially for the regular season. David Amber, was it nice to get that first Saturday night kind of out of the way?
Getting the pre-show jitters, the butterflies were going, my legs weren't right, got a couple of paper cuts, but I'm fighting through the pain. It was fun. You know what? It's good. And that first Saturday was perfect. We had 30 teams playing. We had all 7 Canadian teams. You couldn't really ask for a better sort of starting point for Hockey Night this year. The Leafs-Rangers game, 13 goals, and Vancouver upsets Edmonton. I mean, there was a lot of action going on, so it was the perfect start to the season.
And you come in this week, Ottawa's in Edmonton, Calgary's in Vancouver, and it's amazing how the trajectory of some of the Western teams has faded. When you started last fall, coming off an entire year where there's no Canadian teams in the playoffs, and we're not quite sure. Connor McDavid's got to get back to full health. We're not sure about Calgary, not sure about Vancouver. There's probably more excitement. Now, I would say it's almost exclusively based in Edmonton, right? There's the Oilers' expectations, and then there's everybody else out west, really, isn't there?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's wide open, absolutely, and I think, yeah, clearly Edmonton, you know, they're the second odds-on favorite, if you believe what Vegas is saying, to win the Stanley Cup behind the defending champs. But Winnipeg could be Ottawa this year, and what I mean is you have all these great individual parts. If they can get their act together, I have them picked for the postseason, and I know they got off to a pretty ominous start, but I still like their parts. If Steve Mason can give them better than average goaltending, they should be a playoff team based on what they have at their disposal. And I like Calgary. I love what they did in the offseason. You know, the Auger thing is neither here nor there for me, but everything else they did, Smith solidifying their goaltending a little bit, and Hamonic on the blue line. I like what they've done, and I do see them as perhaps the team, you know, behind the Oilers in that division. So I do have high hopes for the Western teams, and then, you know, Vancouver, you know, listen, they were 29th last year, guys, and they're still in the rebuild mode, and they're going to have real hard time scoring goals, but they're going to grit it out. Travis Green's giving them sort of a new identity, and I think they're going to be interesting to keep an eye on this year as well.
For Vancouver, too, isn't it just important the fact that finally they've labeled this a rebuild? Finally, they kind of have a direction that the fans can follow?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, whether it was the ownership group or management was a little reluctant to sort of completely bottom out. And let's face facts, it's not easy for Jim Benning. When you have the Sedin twins, you're not going to fully bottom out. I mean, maybe this is the year where, at their age and the reduced ice time, you know, maybe this is the year where we do see, and it could be their last year, where we do see the team sort of acknowledge that. And I think that is important because you're a sophisticated fan base and you can't sort of pull the wool over anyone's eyes. And it's going to be an interesting year for them because they have a ton of money coming off the books, not just the Sedins. They got $21 million coming off. You know, they brought in Vanek, who's going to be a UFA as well. Good Branson's a UFA. So they're going to be able to kind of change the look and feel of this team, and finishing near the bottom of the NHL standings wouldn't behoove them as far as moving forward and really being a legitimate Stanley Cup contender again.
It's really hard, isn't it? Because I figure, David, there's 122 jobs, and they're in the four North American sports leagues where an architect, a general manager, gets told, could you maybe not be really good at your job over the next little... And you have that competitive instinct. Like the three of us would say, if someone came to us and said, broadcasting-wise, can you just sort of hold the fort down? Don't be too good. If anything, you could have a couple bad nights and bad shows because we really want to move the product forward. Like in the Premier League and college sports. I know you love college sports. So you're not telling an athletic director, a couple 2-10 seasons for this football team would be really good. There's no benefit, but this is the business where there's a benefit sometimes, isn't there?
Well, it's funny, though, because if I'm a GM, that's the last thing you really want to hear. That's not the mandate you want to be given, because this is a what have you done for me lately industry. I mean, we've had 12 new GMs in the last 3 years and 18 hired since 2014. So think about that. The turnover is more than, you know, it's closing in on, what, 60-65% in the last 3 years. So you don't have a 5-8 year window to sort of get your act together, generally, unless your name's Garth Snow, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just don't have the luxury of that. So, yeah, it's hard. It's hard if that's the mandate because you want to know if you're going to be the guy when the team starts to turn the corner. Are you going to be able to sort of bear the fruits of that labor that you put in and as far as picking up prospects and future draft picks, et cetera? It's a crazy business, you know, coaching even more so. I mean, the turnover there and the churn is incredible. So you're right. That's the last message they really want to hear, I would imagine.
And I think so many, you know, the Toronto market so well, I think so many misunderstandings about how the market wouldn't accept a rebuild. And I can tell you from radio, and you probably felt it too, there'd never been less interest in the actual games than in the 15-16 Leafs. And then they get Austin Matthews, and there's never been more hype, I suppose, about a young group coming up together. When we were little kids, okay, yeah, Sittler and McDonald and Salming, but you still had juggernauts in the league like Montreal and the Islanders and Philadelphia, and you're like, they're really fun, they're really good, but this feels as wide open an opportunity as kind of the franchise has had in 50 years.
Well, think about this. What if there was no salary cap? I mean, this Leaf team could be, you know, they have the makings, the foundation to be a dynasty type team when you have the youth and the skill of their best players and how young they are. You know, under the salary cap era, it's a totally different ballgame. I mean, they're on the clock, essentially, right? I mean, when you look at Matthews, Marner, and Nylander combined to make $2.7 million this year, in 2 years, that trio is going to be making upwards of, you know, $25 million, the three of them. So this is the window right now, kind of not necessarily this year to win a cup, but, you know, it's a 2-3 year window, and they're going to have to do it with other people because they're not going to be able to afford this core of guys as they are.
With where the NHL is right now, with them and expanding to Las Vegas and how that started, but comparing the NHL to the other big sports, especially south of the border, and from you working down there, what does the NHL need to do to become more marketable in the States?
Wow, that's a great question, Carolyn. I'm not sure there's much more they can do. I mean, yes, having more personalities and you know, when you look at the NBA, which is a great marketing league, and everyone identifies and knows LeBron. I mean, if LeBron walks in to any room, you know, where there's any sports fans, period, or people, just generally, he's so identifiable. You can't say that about the biggest NHL stars. I can tell you, when I worked at ESPN, we'd have some of the you know, bigger name stars come in to do those great ESPN commercials mm-hmm. that they do, the promos for SportsCenter, and they'd be in the cafeteria, and people would be like, "Who's that with Linda Cohn? Who's that over there with Dan Patrick?" And I'd be like, "I don't know, like Alexander Ovechkin." You know, like, it would be like, "You really have never seen this guy before?" So, and these are people who worked in sports. It's a tough sell. It's a very regional game. It really is, and I think the NHL's done a good job of marketing to non-traditional hockey markets. We saw the excitement in Nashville during the Stanley Cup final. But quite frankly, if you know, the Predators are crappy for the next 5 years, it's going to lose its luster. And you're not going to have just the traditional – it's not bred into the fans from a young age the way it is in Canada. And I think that's the real difficulty, and it's hard to kind of cross that hurdle. And I think you're asking me what they can do, and I'm not sure there is a solution because, you know, when you kind of go out of the Northeast markets – you know, it's tough because it's not a sport they grow up on. It's not a sport you don't go into every corner. There's a basketball court. There's a baseball field all around. You know, there's football fields every, you know, 20 feet when you go down to the south. You're not going to have just a bunch of hockey rinks and accessibility the way we have here in Canada. So I think that's a massive hurdle. So I don't think there's much they can do. I think they've got to just try and win fans over by having an exciting product, and an exciting product and some big-name players like Connor McDavid could hopefully go a long way to growing the sport in the States, you know?
Yeah, I think if you're in by now. I do think, and I'll tell you, television's changed so much where we see every game every night, David. I think in the States it's only the NFL and college football that can remain unregionalized. I even notice it with baseball. We get 162 Blue Jays games here. It's not like you used to get two a week when we were kids, and so Monday night baseball or the Saturday afternoon game meant something, and you saw a lot of the good now you can see any team anytime, and not that makes it lose its luster, but you don't make it an appointment viewing to see Sunday night baseball because the Cubs are playing the Cardinals. You can see the Cubs 7 days a week now. And it's so much time to invest, unlike football. If you love the Jays, you got potentially 21, 22 hours you got to invest a week. An NFL team, four. That's it. That's all you have to invest.
The NFL is the perfect format to not be a regional entity, and the fact that they'll, and granted, it used to just be Sundays, and now it's really, you know, Thursdays, Sundays, Mondays, and starting pretty soon we're going to start seeing some Saturday games when we get closer to the holidays. But it's still the perfect format. It's still the one sport where on a Sunday night, I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm not even a Packers fan. But those two teams are playing, I'm going to tune in.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you're a Cubs fan. You're a Cardinals fan. You're going to watch those teams. But if they're not your teams, you're not necessarily – it's not appointment viewing. And the NHL is the same thing. I think you're right. That's not an NHL problem. That's just sort of how many hours do you have in a day, right? I mean, I have two kids, and they'll watch certain sports, but they're not going to sit there even for 2.5-3 hours and watch a hockey game necessarily. They'll kind of want to see the goals. So the way people are watching is different, and the, you know, the amount of options at your disposal have changed, and that's the challenge that sports leagues are looking at right now. And quite frankly, television networks are looking at the same challenges, like how do we retain our viewers, and that's a big thing.
All the tennis tournaments Carolyn watches, you and I, David, we just don't. There aren't enough. I mean, that when the Tashkent Open second round is on and it's a Wednesday, we can't keep up with what she's doing.
What a tournament
in Uzbekistan!
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
We cannot keep up with it.
I like the tennis too, not as much as Carolyn, but I like the tennis too. It's fun.
But I just think of what you were saying too about the personality. Like in the NBA, it just seems like it's the type of environment and even media where they kind of thrive off that personality. We're in, I don't know if it's, maybe it's in part Canadian media to blame, but it's like players are afraid to show their personality because they could say something that'll get them in trouble.
And that's true. And I mean, it's funny. And we're the first people to sort of, you know, Patrick Kane went and says a couple things, or you know, Matt Duchene celebrates a goal, and it becomes this controversy. And it's right. We sometimes want to get, you know, candid, real reactions and humanize them. And then when they act human, the culture of the NHL is sort of, oh, it's about the team. Why are you standing out? You know, why are you being flamboyant in any way, shape, or form? We don't celebrate that. In the NBA, they embrace it. They encourage it. And quite frankly, there's a big cultural tie-in with the NBA. It's about clothes. It's about music. It's about swag. It's not always about how good the player is. It's about how they conduct themselves. There's a cool factor there, which you don't see in other sports. I mean, I made the example of Alexander Ovechkin being at the ESPN cafeteria, and people didn't know who he was. Quite frankly, Mike Trout, who's a superstar baseball player, you know, he's got a couple million followers on Twitter, but nothing compared to, you know, his equal in the NBA would have. So it is certainly, you know, the NBA is sort of in a league of its own when it comes to marketing its athletes, and the NHL hasn't done as good a job with that. But I think you're right. The culture doesn't lend itself to being an individual.
Tell us about the legacy of being, you know, it's a very rare we get a chance during chats to get reflective. But you're on Hockey Night in Canada. It must have been an amazing day when a press release goes out and says, David Amber's a host on Hockey Night in Canada. You'd gone to Olympics. You had your ESPN years. Tell me your initial experience as a kid with Hockey Night in Canada. I mean, it is really something to be part of a broadcast institution. There are new things that crop up all the time we get to be part of. But this is decade. Like, the fan just celebrated 25 years, and just to even be a small part of it, like Carol and I have been, is something. But Hockey Night in Canada, that's 90 years, right? Like, that's really incredible.
It's nuts, and sometimes you kind of lose sight because we're always grinding it out in this, doing what we do. We love it, but you're grinding it out. Sometimes you got to take a step back and go, wow, I'm so lucky to have these opportunities. And that's how I feel, and that's how I felt. And, honestly, you talk about when you were a kid and you mentioned Sittler and McDonald's. I grew up in downtown Toronto, a diehard Leaf fan. Used to go down to the Maple Leaf Gardens about three times a year. My dad would get tickets. We would sit literally, I'm not exaggerating, top row. There'd be a bunch of, it's funny, I see Dart Guy now, and I'm thinking, that's no big deal. I mean, everyone at the Maple Leaf Gardens was smoking up on the top section. It was actually pretty horrible. But you know, that certain smell from the arena and that certain, I just remember going to the games and thinking, wow, this is so cool. The Leafs in 78, I remember crying when they lost to Montreal in the semifinals after they eliminated the Islanders. I mean, it was one of those great runs, and it was just something that stuck with me. And it was, you know, kind of a family. It was a family thing. I just remember you'd go and 8 o'clock, all right, and Peter Puck and everything else on the Saturdays. It was a big. It was fun. It was sort of my better childhood memories. A lot of them pertain to the family gathering around and watching the Leaf games on a Saturday night. And now to be part of that. A small part of it, but a part of it, it's very cool and exciting. And especially now, guys, because the Canadian teams, you know, talk about timing. Like, boy, 2 years ago was tough for all of us because the teams were out of it so early. The Canadian teams, they weren't competitive and there was a lot of negativity. And now there's a lot of optimism, and it's true optimism. And sort of be able to ride that wave for the next few years, hopefully, is really, really exciting to me.
Yeah, it's more fun in our industry to work when people are excited and teams are winning.
Oh my God. It makes a total difference. Right?
Yeah.
Tell us about Olympics. Nick Kypreos was on our show this morning. He started talking about Austin Matthews and what we saw. I went to the game last night against the Devils, and Nick was there too. So we started talking about him on the forecheck, and it got me. It was the first time in a while. Maybe I needed the games to start because I was a guy in the summer that said, I get it. I get where the NHL's at. It's tough to ask you mentioned all these markets in the States. It's tough to say, let's close our doors right after the Super Bowl. Let's have no product available to our consumers for 2.5 weeks. But when he started talking about that, I'm like, God, yeah, Austin Matthews would be playing on a USA team with Jack Eichel and Patrick Kane, and we'd all debate Canada's picks as two-time defending champs. How did you feel when the announcement came, there are no NHLers? I know you've covered Olympics, so it's got to have a special place in your heart. And you go back to when we were kids and they were amateur teams. That's how we discovered the Russ Cortinals and Mario Goslins, and we cheered for those teams in Lake Placid and Sarajevo, even though there were no NHLers on them.
Yeah, such a different era, though, Greg. I mean, I don't romanticize. I mean, yeah, we all know what happened in Lake Placid in 1980, but I'm not going to pretend to romanticize at the time. I mean, we couldn't even see those games live. I mean, that's how long ago we're talking. Generally, you know, America didn't know they'd won gold till like 10 hours after they'd won gold. The whole thing's kind of crazy when you think back that far. But I think we're kind of getting robbed as fans, to be perfectly honest. Picture Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby playing together on a line. I mean, in 1987, we had Lemieux and Gretzky, and that's probably the best hockey I can remember ever seeing. And we're not going to get that opportunity now. And maybe 4 years in China we will, but 4 years from now, Sidney Crosby will be 34. It's not the same as Crosby coming off a second straight Stanley Cup and McDavid, you know, coming off a Hart Trophy and Art Ross. You kind of have one shot at having those two get a chance together to represent Canada. And we're not going to see that, and I think it's a shame.
So would a World Cup do it? Would a World Cup do it for you though? Because I didn't like the young guns concept. Because I'm thinking what you're thinking. I'm like, McDavid isn't playing with Crosby, and Matthews isn't on the U.S. team. And I know people like the concept of it. Like for us, David, like 1987 is our 1972 for people of our generation. The Canada Cups were awesome. What an awesome way to start the fall. But I felt something was a little missing last fall, and I wanted to mean what it meant, or even in '96. Before pros went, when the USA swiped that away, we were all angry. We were angry that happened.
Yeah, you can't compare. And I enjoyed the World Cup, and I enjoyed the young guns, I'll be honest, or the team, what would they call it, Team North America. I enjoyed that. They were so much fun to watch play, McKinnon and McDavid and Matthews and everyone. But I agree with you. I don't see it in the same light as the Olympics. The Olympics, you talk to the athletes, and there's such this incredible pride representing their country. You're not going to feel that way when you're Team Europe, you know? Like, it just isn't the same. We can't make it the same. Yes, it's on paper, could be 2 years from now, McDavid and Crosby playing together, but it's not the same as the Olympics. So I don't see them in the same light.
Okay, so as we head into the second weekend of Hockey Night in Canada for this season, you mentioned how you think Winnipeg could be the Ottawa Senators of this year. But what team in the NHL or what player are you kind of seeing as a dark horse?
Ooh. Well, I picked Tampa to win the Stanley Cup. I wouldn't identify them necessarily as a dark horse, but I do think I like what they have. Mm-hmm. And it's so wide open, Carolyn. It makes it – you're putting me on the spot here. It's so difficult.
Sorry.
Come on. You're killing me here. No. I don't know. I picked Tampa and Edmonton in the final. I think, you know, there's going to be some, you know, last year we saw, I think, six or seven different playoff teams from the year previous. It wouldn't shock me if we see that again. I mean, that's the parity of the league. It won't shock me if none of the California teams made the playoffs. And I know a lot of people are very high on Anaheim, but it wouldn't shock me. You know, Dallas is going to take a step forward. Winnipeg, I think, will take a step forward. Minnesota's still a very good team. It's hard to identify one specific team. You know, Florida should be much better. You know, I like Bugner, and I think, you know, moving Jagr's opened up some space for guys like Barkov and Huberto and these guys to sort of take a step forward. If Ekblad could find his old form, that would help them a lot. You know, goaltending might be the issue there. But, you know, there are a handful of teams. Carolina is a team that people find very sexy, and they have these great young blue liners. If they can make a move and get a bit more scoring, that could be a team to keep an eye on. Philadelphia's looked great. So there are a handful of teams that could jump up. I really like Winnipeg, and it's funny saying that. They're 1-2, and they looked, you know, pretty horrible in that opening night loss to Toronto. But I do like those parts. I do like the talent on the blue line. I like the depth up front. And if Mason can give them some goaltending, I honestly don't think it's unfathomable that they can make a pretty deep run this year. They will be a tough out if they make the playoffs. I'll leave it at that.
We'll destroy the tape if it doesn't happen.
Please do.
I make enough bad predictions. Ottawa and Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver this week on CBC Sportsnet 1 and City. Much to Carolyn's chagrin, you're the only show I stay up past midnight for.
What?
I can't do it any other evening except Friday night I fall asleep around 9:30 because after a whole week of getting up at 4 a.m. So, but Carolyn got up really early to do this today. Safe travels. We'll be watching on Saturday night, and thank you so much for doing this.
Guys, anytime. Thanks for having me. And I stay up late to watch Carolyn. I make sure I'm there. And I get up early to listen to you, Greg. So I'm all over the place. That's why I'm, you know, my family hates me now. So
your check's in the mail.
Take care, guys. Enjoy.
Thank you. It's nice having David Amber on. And it's nice hearing, too, a little bit more just about, I don't know, focusing a little bit more on the West Coast teams. I get how right now I think there were a lot of happy hockey fans, if you're not a Leafs fan, to see the Leafs lose, because there's been so much hype surrounding them since they started undefeated.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm with him where I think the Jets will be interesting. And I don't think the Canucks will make the playoffs, but I think they'll have a better season or more interesting season, perhaps, than a lot of people expect.
Let's play the clip from James Cebulski when he was on and told us how great they would be. He just started listing players that
you can't.
And it's one of those things also where we'll be 25 years in to no Canadian teams winning, and obviously close calls, like Game 7 Tampa-Calgary, Game 7 Carolina-Edmonton. But I think we still have these debates as to how much the country of 35 million people would get behind a team. We know they weren't getting behind the 11 Canucks. I do wonder about Edmonton. Toronto.
Yes.
I think that they would. Yeah, I think Edmonton is the only one because of McDavid and because of even the story, like sort of how long suffering they've been. Maybe you'd have some, I think you'd have some holdouts who are Calgary Flames fans who just can't see it. And yeah. I get it and I understand it. And I'm never going to tell people, you know, who to cheer for or who to boo or what to feel about another team when they're like, I have this affinity that's out of nowhere for the New York Yankees right now. I love watching Judge and Sanchez. I'm happy for Girardi that they ended up winning. I want Cleveland to get rid of their racist logo. I've got some irrationalities about the Yankees tribe series, but that has no impact. Like, I know it's naturally, if you live in Toronto here, it's like you hope the Yankees and Red Sox lose every single game they play. But I do think Edmonton, some people in Vancouver and Winnipeg and certainly the East would put a lot of that aside and say, we're on a ride here. Let's watch Edmonton beat a Pittsburgh. Washington would be interesting. There I go throwing Alex Ovechkin right into the Stanley Cup final when he hasn't been out of the second round, because it'd be interesting how that would feel. But if Edmonton's there, I think we're all embracing that.
I want to see in the playoffs, in the postseason, I want to see good hockey. So wherever that comes from, I think hockey fans in Canada, if it's McDavid who's arguably the most entertaining player, I think they'll get behind him. I do have confidence that a Canadian team will win the Stanley Cup before the U.S. Will win the World Cup.
Okay. I always thought you were going to say this year or the next year, and I'm like, you don't want to jinx it.
I'm not that sleep deprived.
And then Columbus and Carolina are in the Stanley Cup final, and executives are walking around here very... Exactly.
We don't need to go there.
Not to wish ill upon those franchises.
No.
They're lovely places to visit. I've only been to Carolina. I've been to Raleigh. I have not been to Columbus. In Raleigh especially, yeah. Not quite as few as Columbus. But yes, the big dramatic news, and this was treated very differently by Canadians, and I took some guff, if you will, on Twitter when I said, well, now this makes the World Cup a little less interesting. Because I think the U.S., though we're here in Toronto, and if you're across the country, you tend to cheer for teams based on the style of play in the World Cup or where your ancestors are from. There's always reason, or like certain players for teams that you cheer for. But there's generally not much disagreement that the U.S. is not boring. You're either sort of with them or against them when it comes to soccer, and they've become such a fixture. They've leaped past us on the world chain, whereas we were more equals in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. And with a nation of 10 times as many people and a great infrastructure, college soccer at the women's and men's level, I noticed that people are very much, well, the U.S. didn't make the World Cup. And they're like, well, the women have won three of them and they always make them. I know, but that goes to show you where the funding has gone and how much development there's been in the United States for soccer. And I will say, as a big-time fan, I will feel weird that they're not there next summer. Weird.
I wonder who's more upset, if it's fans or Fox, because they spent $400 million on the rights.
And they get no refund. This is not like a pair of pants that you can take back to the store and get store credit. Like, that money is gone, and you must put the 32 teams on that are there, whether the United States are there or not. We're very pleased to welcome into the Sportsnet Point Taken podcast a name familiar to many who enjoy the Premier League on Saturday mornings. He's the voice of the sport on NBC and NBC Sports Network. Also has done several Super Bowls for Five Live and called with me, amazingly enough, Carol.
And
he survived
it.
Some of those Super Bowls and the first ever NFL game at Wembley Stadium, which might have been the worst ever NFL game that we've ever watched together. Arlo White joins us from NBC and NBC Sports Network. It's great to have you on. That was a bad game, and it ripped up the Wembley pitch so badly that England lost an important World Cup qualifier the very next day or a couple days after, right?
Oh, it's all coming back now, Greg. Hi, how you doing? And hi, Caroline. didn't say it was the Giants Dolphins. The Giants went on to win the Super Bowl that year, so it kind of made sense to a lot of more teams who were fearing coming to Wembley would completely derail their season. But I think the game you're talking about, was it Croatia?
Yeah.
3-2, the Wally with the Brolly, Steve McLaren, when it was raining, and they didn't qualify for the Euros.
That's right, Euro 2008. That's right.
On the pitch, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very
good times, man.
Very bad news. We should Arlo also so many years in Major League Soccer on NBC. And you came over. Let's go back before we get into all this about the USA and CONCACAF. Because it was a pretty dark, and I think it was a dark day for North Americans, as you might relate. Canadians tend to cheer against Team USA in major sporting events, so there was some glee. But I thought, no, I'm not sure it's so good for the continent. But you moved to Seattle, at Seattle, Washington. Yeah. A lot of our listeners would be fascinated by that. You left some great work. You would call cricket, you would call NFL, you were doing some football. But tell the audience this interesting story about how you moved, and with your family, to Seattle, Washington at the time when there might have been some risk of doing it. I think it paid off. You made a great decision.
Yes, hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it? But I was confident in what I was doing, even though some of my colleagues at the BBC, you know, wanted to slap me around the face and ask me, why are you giving up this job? Because, you know, we're working for the BBC on national radio, where they have all the rights on BBC Radio 5 Live for pretty much everything, or certainly did when I was working there. So you've got to do some great stuff, like you mentioned, travel the world doing cricket, you know, Premier League football every weekend at the point that I left. Super Bowls, did five of those, and then those other NFL games we did together. It was a great life, and it was a great 10 years, and it provided me with a great ground in broadcasting. But, you know, I always wanted to be true to the six-year-old little Arlo, who wanted to be a soccer commentator full-time, and the BBC had enough of those. You know, I was getting the odd opportunity here and there, but I wanted to be a soccer commentator, and no one was offering me a job to do that. And I always wanted to live in America. I always wanted to experience life in America. I've been visiting the country for my entire life since the age of 13. And I came into contact at one of the Super Bowls with the guys that run the broadcasting for the Seattle Seahawks, who told me that Seattle had an MLS franchise and they were looking for an announcer. And in the end, they went for a guy called Kevin Calabro, who was the Sonics announcer for 21 years, I think, before they left for Oklahoma. And he decided to stay in Seattle. He was true to the city, didn't travel with the team. So the Sounders decided, you know, nice PR coup. Let's get the local legend Kevin Calabro to call the games in the first year. Now, I was treated as a host, or they hosted me, I should say, in the opening game of the franchise, a 3-0 win over the New York Red Bulls, which was a great experience. And I kind of figured that something was bubbling. So if it didn't work out with Kevin, maybe I'd get the call. And that's exactly what happened. So it was a big risk. People, as I say, were wondering what on earth I was getting myself into. But I'd done my due diligence, Greg. It wasn't, you know, a crazy decision. If you break it down, they were part owned by Paul Allen, you know, Joe Roth, the movie mogul. They were an NFL team, and still are an NFL organization in Major League Soccer. So it was a great move for me, and a fantastic 2 years.
The MLS, it's here to try and grow the game in North America and also the States. Mm. And with the U.S. not qualifying for the World Cup, everyone's kind of looking for someone to blame. But it's such a complex issue that it's hard to point your finger at just one person. But MLS and the structure of Major League Soccer, is that not one area that we could maybe look at?
It is, Caroline, and I was tweeting about this yesterday because, you know, the debate is wide and varied and complicated, as you mentioned. You know, people are in mourning, people are in meltdown, people are angry. You know, the finger's been pointed at the players, rightfully so. I haven't seen the game, but people that I trust, because it wasn't on over here, bizarrely, but people that I trust say it was one of the worst performances they've ever seen by a U.S. national team. So you have to point the finger at the players. For that, they're culpable. Bruce Arena as well. Some people want to see Sunil Gulati, the head of U.S. soccer, to step down. Well, actually, there's a high chance he gets re-elected in the new year. You know, pay to play has been mentioned a lot. It's, you know, it's a bit of a upper middle class sport. If you want to take it to better levels, you know, you need lots of money to travel with club teams and all that sort of thing. You know, college soccer, the role that plays in development of play. So there are all these different threads as to why the US have been in this position. But look, Caroline, it was coming. You know, they hadn't qualified for the last two Olympics with age group teams. They lost in the Gold Cup semifinals to Jamaica last time out. You know, thumped in the Centenario tournament as well by Argentina. There's no disgrace in that, but they were properly thumped, weren't they? So I don't think this is a particularly good group of players. You know, by, you know, say for a couple like Pulisic, if you like, and Dempsey's kind of getting on in age. Howard, fantastic goalkeeper, kind of getting on in age. I didn't think this was a stellar US team. That said, it is the closest to a bye that you can possibly get in world soccer, being in the CONCACAF X. Four teams progress out of six. You know, you win 4 out of 10, you're in, or you're at least in the playoff, and you get to take on Australia, you know, who you'd fancy maybe, you know, to beat them. So to your question, that was a long-winded way of getting around to it. MLS, I think, is fantastic. The way that it's grown in recent years has been extraordinary. We've seen Atlanta come in. I was at the first wave of Seattle and the Pacific Northwest with Portland and Vancouver. We've got more teams to come in. You know, Minnesota have done a great job. The league is going places. No question about it. It is here to stay. Toronto killing it this year, doing fantastically well. Let's see if they can convert that into an MLS Cup. The problem I have, and this is where I can talk with some authority, because I talk to players about it, is the value of 3 points. In England, and you talk to people like Lee Dixon and Graham, so who I work closely with, former England internationals, you know, the atmosphere around a football club, if you've lost a game, is horrible. You know, and immediately after a game, it's horrible. The whole week is about getting 3 points. They are so vital because there's so much riding on them. In Major League Soccer, I think there is a slightly softer attitude. And people that have gone back to play in it have mentioned this to me. American internationals that have gone back to play in it. You know, Americans that have gone overseas and gone back. And foreign pros that have gone to play in the league. You don't win this one, I'll win the next one. Or maybe we'll win the next one. Because, look, if we finish top six, we're in the playoffs. And 12 out of 22 teams qualify for the postseason after a 34-game season. And I think with all the U.S. internationals that MLS have courted and got back into the league, and I can see why they've done that. I think it's a great thing. But have they gone a little soft? Is there enough emphasis placed on each game? Then you go into the hex and you kind of think, well, if we don't win this game, we'll beat Honduras at home, we'll beat Costa Rica. And they haven't. So I think it's something to look at, the structure of Major League Soccer. I don't think you're going to see promotion and relegation, which a lot of people would like to see, because the way the league makes money is to charge $100, $125 million in franchise fees. You know, they don't get the billion-dollar TV contract yet. So they're going to have to keep it a closed shop, and you're not going to pay $125 million for a franchise if you could be relegated next year to MLS 2. So it's a difficult situation, but I'd like to see 3 points meaning more and having that culture of we have to win today. It's not good enough to lose today and say, we'll get them next week.
It's a great point, Arlo, because I look at the standings, and as you know, you're so ingrained with the North American sports culture of playoffs, and let's put more teams in the playoffs. Like Major League Baseball, we wouldn't want to see 8 teams in the playoffs because it trivializes the regular season. NFL, we wouldn't want 8 teams per conference. But I look in the West right now. This is apropos of nothing, but Sporting Kansas City's second in the Western Conference, Arlo. They've won 2 of 16 road matches. They've lost 7 and tied 7. So teams are going to other stadiums, and you see the Premier League every week, you call a couple of games every weekend. Of course, Huddersfield wants to go to Old Trafford and just get a point. But at home, they should be trying to win every match. And we're not seeing that in the MLS because you've got a lot of wiggle room for error.
Yes, precisely. And it just takes away the intensity, Greg, you know, and that win at all costs sort of culture. Now, you know, you've got the teams who have the stadiums now. You have the best attended games in the history of Major League Soccer. It's only a young league. It was only formed in 1996. They're making terrific progress. They're getting away from, you know, signing aging stars, 35, 36-year-old stars, you know, look great on paper. You can barely get them to play because they're injured all the time. And they're signing younger players, younger, more dynamic players. You know, the academy system is going to take time to produce players. But where I agree with the argument that these players do need to go abroad is because that's where you are turned into a hard-nosed pro. That's when there is no wriggle room. That's when there is nowhere to hide. That's where the scrutiny is on you 24/7, which it maybe isn't in some of the markets in Major League Soccer. It will change. And I just want to see harder, just harder-nosed pros, Greg, I think is what I'm trying to say, where 3 points means the world and it makes or breaks their week. Playoffs, I can understand why MLS has gone down the American sporting route. Don Garber, the commissioner, has made that very, very clear. We're going conferences and we're going playoffs and we're having a Super Bowl-type MLS Cup game, winner-takes-all. I get that. It's very American. It's very North American. But they've got to make 3 points more valuable.
Do you worry then if changes aren't made that the skill in the league will regress?
Sorry, Caroline.
Are you worried that if they don't make changes to the structure, if they don't change the point system, that there is a fear of the league regressing?
Well, not necessarily the league, but maybe the national team. Because
yeah.
I think beforehand, the league, you know, the U.S. would select an MLS-based team for the biannual Gold Cup. And that was a chance for, you know, journeyman MLS players to play for the national team. And, you know, by and large, they did pretty well. And it was World Cups qualifiers where the big boys came to play, if you like. You know, the Kid Dempseys, the Tim Howards, and all the guys, Brian McBride, Casey Keller, those guys that were playing overseas in top leagues would come back for those games. The situation now is that a majority of the U.S. national team are made up of Major League Soccer players. That's either players that the league has produced or players that the league has brought back. So now MLS is invested in the national team because they're having a direct influence over their success or otherwise. And I think now people are waking up to the fact that MLS, whether it's perfect or not, is having that effect. So can it be better? Can they come up with a better system now that they've got so many of the U.S. national team players that the country's relying on in their league? Can they make it more competitive so that they're more hardened when they go and play international soccer? That said, guys, it's a disgrace, really, that they didn't win more than 3 games out of 10 in CONCACAF and finish 5th in a 6-team table. It is outrageous. Even with the team they had, they should have qualified comfortably.
Yeah. Oh, well, and Panama makes it, scoring 9 goals in 10 matches and winning 3 of the 10 matches, and that's an automatic automatic berth. It's remarkable. Now, you went through this in '94 with England. What does it do? Not that Canada is the United States, because as you know, with Canada, the people, it's very, and Toronto especially, very cosmopolitan. We'll cheer for England, we'll cheer for Germany, we'll cheer for Italy. It's such a melting pot, like London is, of cultures. What do you think it does for soccer in the United States, knowing the landscape and knowing the fandom that's there on Fox next year, to not have the host team on their broadcasts for a 32-team tournament in Russia? What does that do? It's so devastating.
Yeah. It is. It absolutely is on so many different levels, Greg. You know, I was a fan in '94, and you know, they failed to qualify England in '93 for that tournament in the US, and your heart just aches. It's an indescribable feeling, because you love the game of soccer, and we still watch the World Cup, but your heart aches that you're not there, that you're not part of it, that this game you're watching now is only 3 days until your first group game, or, you know, you've got your must-win final group game to get through, and you get together with your mates, and you go to the pub, and it's just this brilliant communal experience. And you saw in the last World Cup, or the last couple of World Cups, the size of the crowds that were gathering in places like Chicago, in Grand Park, you know, 50, 60,000 people to watch these, you know, the Ghana game or the Portugal game or the Germany game on these huge screens in Grand Park. You know, that was replicated around the country. Bars absolutely packed. Soccer on the front page of the newspaper, being discussed on ESPN or Fox Sports or whatever. And it's going to be diluted. There's no question about it. And it is hard. And the World Cup is where the U.S., where soccer's front and center, because you're kind of in the middle of the baseball season. It's kind of before the All-Star break, isn't it? It's a great time in America where there's not a great deal of top-level sport out of season in NHL, NBA, NFL. So, you know, it's a great time to showcase the sport. The audiences are massive in comparison to every other form of soccer in the United States. I'm sure you do, guys, as well. You look at it from a broadcasting perspective. All the guys that were going to go over there and commentate on this space have been denied that. You know, the guys that were going to go over and cover it financially for Fox, you get the advertising revenue that they were hoping to get. You know, there are no certainties in sport, Greg. You know, there are good certainties in most American sport, but the TV execs must be just whacking their head against their desk, you know, this week, because they've spent all that money. No guarantee the US would qualify. And the nightmare scenario has occurred, and they just have to make sure this doesn't happen again.
It's bad.
We were floored by the gravitas
of
your statement.
All the money they put into it, like all the, it is a nightmare.
Yeah, it's one of those remarkable things to recover from. Listen, in Canada, we're just hoping to go again before we die. It's been since 1986.
Yeah. Man.
That's everybody mentioned Arlo all week. 1986. I'm like, that sounds familiar. It's the last time Canada went. So, with Craig,
slowly better though, isn't it? From what I can gather.
Yeah, starting to make some progress, but then
we appreciate your positivity.
I think you were on the continent when Canada went to Honduras, needing a tie to make the hex, and we lost 8-1. Yeah. So there's that to consider. That's speaking of nightmarish. Premier League this year, you're 7 matches in. This is your second half decade of calling matches. The popularity of the league in the United States has never been bigger. I know you hear from people all across all 50 states. What do you make of, what kind of race do we have? Early days, it's two teams, but what do you see for a Chelsea? What do you see even for Spurs, where even though I think their own fans are skeptical they're one of the big boys this year? What do you think?
Well, I think Spurs are going to be challengers again. I honestly, Greg, and I know Manchester City are probably the best team in the league. I don't think there's much question about that at the moment. Things can change, injuries, you know. Does Aguero go to any more concerts in Amsterdam between now and the end of the season, 2 days before a game? Another story. But Spurs are definitely one of the challenges. Over the course of the last 2 seasons, they've got more points than anybody else, but they've finished second and third. They've been in the title race until the end. I wonder if history will say that they just missed 2 fantastic opportunities to win a title for the first time since 1961. Leicester won the first one. Yeah, Leicester won the first one, Chelsea won the second one. So they've really missed an opportunity. If they were playing at White Hart Lane this year, I think they could have done it. But they've got to get over this Wembley thing. I don't believe in hoodoos, Greg, and all that sort of mystical stuff. I don't believe in any of that. I just believe it's a massive stage. It's emotionally draining. It's physically draining. And they haven't quite got up to speed yet. So they've got to sort their home form out. If they do, they're going to contend. You know, Chelsea, lighter squad. Morata's injury is a problem. But Conte is such a magnificent coach. Bakayoko, I think, is going to be an upgrade on Matic. So I think they're going to be down there about. United's interested with Pogba's injury. That is a massive shame because they're not as stacked as Manchester City. And City are just playing devastating football and scoring goals for fun. So I would say that City would be my favourites. Man United should push them all away, but I think Spurs are in the mix. And then you've got to be looking at top four, you know, a scrap between Arsenal, Liverpool, really. But Chelsea there or thereabouts.
Okay, Arlo, what's this hot dog story I need to hear about? Is it Chicago?
Well, I mean, yeah, it was. I mean, Greg and I did 5 Super Bowls and numerous playoff games. And I can remember one Super Bowl, Super Bowl 42 in Arizona, where we looked across and we were in the rafters of a stadium in a commentary booth that was built on top of everything else. And you could touch the ceiling of Glendale, the stadium there, the University of Phoenix Stadium. And we looked in the booth next door, and there was this blonde lady, young blonde lady, who was serving beers to the Russian commentators. Do you remember this?
That's right.
It was vodka. They were on the vodkas by the third quarter.
Wow.
It was just remarkable. I mean, we had a couple of bananas and a cup of coffee, I think, in a five-hour broadcast. These guys were having a party. And then the famous snow game when the Patriots just tore the Bears apart. We were commentating, and all of a sudden a hairy hand came behind me and took my burger that was in front of me. And I turned around, and there's this guy, just a random, very drunk, scary-looking fan, putting the burger into his mouth and just staring at me. And we were live on air, and it was terrifying. He could have done anything.
Yeah, like the booth was just open.
Good security.
Our executive producer Simon Cross, so valuable and assisting in both their careers, but he did a lousy job of securing the door. A lousy job. And I will say, I haven't told Carolyn this, but Arla was more aggressive with the guy than I would have been. I would have been
really?
Like, do you need anything else? Can I go to concessions and get
you
anything else to eat?
Or...
But Arlo wanted to have that burger in between the third and fourth quarters. We were hungry guys. We were all about fitness and burning calories during our broadcast, not drinking vodka. And that guy was really stepping on your turf. And I think it was like scaring a bear. Like you're worried about a wild animal in your backyard and just one, like a stern look, and shockingly, you're surprised they run away. And those guys just kind of, but we didn't know they were going to come back with bigger guys. That could have happened also.
Well, were you out of food? If you had no more food.
I will say also, Carolyn will appreciate this. I thought of this the other day when the great Tom Petty passed away.
Yeah.
Arlo, now I'm not going to get you in trouble here because we saw so many great Super Bowl halftime shows live. We saw Prince in Miami, right? We saw Springsteen.
Yep.
But Arlo wasn't sure, and this is fair, this is okay, Arlo wasn't sure Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were like a universal enough halftime act, because they're a very American band, and the Super Bowl is a global event. Like, look who they've, when they got Coldplay with Beyonce, that's like, okay, that's everybody is in on this, right? But I remember we had a good spirited 7 or 8 minute Tom Petty debate during the Tom Petty Super Bowl, so I thought of you last week, lamentably.
I've been forced fed Tom Petty for 20 years by my Chicago cousin, who's the same age as me, and he was a Tom Petty fanatic. With hindsight, I think I underplayed the legendary status and the back catalogue of Tom Petty. I've since gone back and corrected that by listening to a lot of it. Do you remember the era that we did? We had great Super Bowls, great games, not like the blowouts that I grew up with in the 80s. But we had aging halftime acts because it was the immediate aftermath of the wardrobe malfunction
Janet Jackson. That's important to point out.
McCartney, we had Springsteen, we had Tom Petty.
Like
you say, Prince. I didn't do the Prince one. That was another.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're right. Okay, Rolling Stones in Detroit were our first one, right?
We had the Rolling Stones. Yeah, exactly. So each act, average age of about 72. You know, at that point, I have subsequently become a Bruce Springsteen obsessive.
Yeah.
And I know a lot more about the Rolling Stones. I think I could hold my own a little better in the musical conversations that you and Simon used to have in the front of the car on the way to games.
I would believe that, and this may come full circle because, as you know, for Minneapolis this year, there's rumors that it's Justin Timberlake being welcomed back by the NFL after what he did. I mean, it was an assault, basically, with his hand. That was not an accident.
Was it not choreographed? Was it not part of the plan?
We'll never know. Carolyn, what did you think when you saw it? Did you think that was orchestrated by Miss Jackson at all? We need a lady's perspective here.
It was a little too perfect. I'd have to review the tape, though.
Which we all did at the time.
Like from the detectives.
That was pre-PVR. And I remember saying to my girlfriend, which became wife, like, I feel like I just saw something. And she's like, well, you'd know. And I'm like, I guess I would. Now, before you go. Now,
adolescent Americans, Janet Jackson or Basic Instinct. I don't know.
Now, before you go, are your daughters, so much has evolved. You were, I was a very young dad when we first met in Detroit for that first Super Bowl. So it's been a decade or so. Do your daughters commandeer the car radio? Because that's the thing. Get you and me and others in the car.
This.
And I can't. Mm. My kids now are like, get the 80s off, Dad. Get the 90s off. It's Despacito. Yeah. It's Shawn Mendes. It's Demi Lovato. I am going crazy. Yeah. Is that happening with you?
A little bit. They understand now that whoever does the school run in the morning, whether it's me or my wife, Lizzie, that when it's with Lizzie, with their mum, it's chart hits, it's Radio 1 as we have over here, and it's all that, those artists you mentioned. But it's with Daddy, it's a lot of Oasis, it's a lot of Liam Gallagher at the moment. I'm loving his new album.
Nice.
And it's a lot of the retro stuff. Like, we've gone through the Beatles back catalogue. They love Abbey Road. And one night, Lizzie didn't realize we were doing this, but they know the words so well. They can remember all words to all songs. I don't know how they do it. And we sang Blackbird by the Beatles. And it came on the radio, and we sang it. And Lizzie actually teared up because she didn't know the Beatles song. It's such a beautiful song as well, the Paul McCartney song. And so I've given them a grounding. They like a bit of Bruce. They like all this sort of rock stuff that their dad likes. They love Oasis. They can't wait them to get back together if that ever happens. I don't think it will, sadly. But they know every Oasis song back to front, and that's my fault. They are Leicester City supporting Oasis lovers. Where did that come from?
I am good for you.
Good for you is right.
Education.
And I must weigh in and say I'm just such a Team Noel person. I never had a younger brother, but I assume he would have treated me like Liam Gallagher treats Noel, and I can't get behind some of this behavior and the insults and the comments, right? Like,
yeah.
It's tough.
I got to take Team Liam on this one. I love Noel. He's written some of the most amazing. He's written the soundtrack to my life, basically. There's no question about it. But God, he doesn't suffer a lack of self-confidence, does he? And he doesn't mind telling everyone how brilliant he is. And I think in the end, he just rubbed it. Without Liam, there is no Oasis, you know, in terms of that voice, that iconic voice over the last 20 years. And Liam's a little bit rough around the edges. He's still a rock star. You know, there's no doubt about it. He's not as talented songwriting-wise than his brother. The two together made absolute magic. But Liam just cracks me up with the things he comes out with. YouTube some of his latest interviews. I mean, he's mad as a box of frogs, but he's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, this tells you, Carolyn, Arlo and I couldn't have been brothers. There would have been guitars smashed
apparently.
And stereo equipment, microphones.
Good thing this is a phone interview.
Destroyed. You're at Watford Arsenal. We will tell people this weekend at Watford as Arsene Wenger takes his team for an away fixture, as we say here, on the road. The English don't say a road game, but it's an away match.
Away game.
Big difference.
Right.
Thank you so much for your insight about the USA and CONCACAF, and we loved having you on. And you're important to me, so I love seeing you every weekend. You know that. Thanks, Darla White. Of course, not a bit of a patchy phone connection. Hopefully, you fought through it. We did. We weren't sure whether we should hang up and call him again. But with international calling, you're never quite sure whether you'll get as good a connection. It may even be worse. So thanks for your patience hanging through that. I think an interesting topic for a lot of soccer fans headed to the summer. So
I just want to make sure you're okay, though, because you've been talking about this radio stuff a lot, and I know it's bothering you. You need to take control.
You need to
take control of the radio in your car.
Or make them walk to places.
That
Put
too.
Them in an
it's
Uber.
Good, it's good exercise.
There's nothing wrong with going to soccer practice or your friend's sleepover in a cab. Just don't, you know, soon we'll have driverless cars and they won't even get that wonderful experience of bumping a taillight or two and coming home with a fender bender dent.
Oh, man, this took a turn.
It took a turn for the worse. But our thanks to Arlo White, our thanks to Dave and Amber. We don't always have two guests on the show, but when we do, it's those two people. That's what I would say about
that. Yeah.
That's what I would say about that.
We'll keep wood up with that short just to spare you.
Sure. And boy, I can only imagine 2 weeks of buildup, lots of thoughts.
Oh, my goodness.
From you. By the way,
what
was your
pick?
Tell me what your. I always ask people who stay in hotels.
I wasn't at a hotel.
Where were you?
Like
a house?
No, like VRBO, like Airbnb.
Okay.
Like condo.
So you got all like American television stations?
Yeah, but I watched basically no TV.
Even at night, eh?
No, I would go to sleep. I read a lot.
And
Greg, that's why I'm so smart.
I know. And the sun, moisturizing, burns, any kind
no,
of skin laborious problems?
I might look like a leather couch in 10 years, but for now, everything's fine.
Listen, there's people in our business that are getting way too much sun. You're not one of them.
Really?
Or there's way too much makeup. It's men and women. It could be. A lot of orange stuff.
Okay. Do you want to start what up with that?
The president of the United States is basically orange. So
don't even get me started down that road.
I will not. Well, you just spent tourist dollars in the United States.
Okay.
You can't be that angry. I know people that won't go to the States. All right. I didn't mean to rile you. Give me what you've noticed, what's been on your mind.
So how far would you go to see a movie? We talked a lot about how in the summer, it was a really bad summer for movies. People weren't going more than ever, more than in years. Well, Jahlil Okafor, in a new profile of him at SB Nation, he mentions that he takes a train from Philadelphia to Manhattan just to catch a flick or two at this really fancy movie theater.
You're kidding me.
I'm not.
These downtown.
So he takes the train, an Amtrak train, from Philly to Penn Station. I mean,
that's a huge. Are you sure it's not part of some long distance relationship?
No.
That's an awfully committed cinema fan to go that far.
And he just really likes it.
He
really likes a fancy theater.
I guess we do that with restaurants. Like, I'm a suburban person, and I think, how often am I actually eating downtown and making a specific 5 times a year? Maybe once every 6 or 7 weeks, I'm in having a meal with someone in the downtown environment. But I don't think it happens. I wouldn't think about going to a movie specifically, because I can see that 5 minutes from my house is what
I'm saying. I guess people have different priorities for the importance of comfort.
It's very strange.
And luxury.
Yeah. And do you have a movie theater, a movie house of choice?
Yeah, I always go to the same theater. It's comfortable. I like it. It's easy to get to. Easy parking. I'm not going to say where it is.
Do you think
it's close
they?
To where I live.
Maybe we can meet her there. She chose the same film at the same time today. What luck? Do you think they should have alcohol in theaters?
Oh, they do now.
But not all of them at all.
Some do.
I want to get rid of some of the food ideas.
I just love popcorn. So I get popcorn.
I do too. So I don't need hot dogs and cheese nachos and fajitas.
I will say I went to go see Beauty and the Beast, and I've saw it twice in theaters. Yes. And I went and saw it in VIP because the rest was sold out. And I'm sorry, having some popcorn wine and watching Beauty and the Beast was pretty
great.
Can't
beat that. Oh, my
goodness.
Cannot
beat it.
Sure. Now, did you watch Breaking Bad all the way through?
No, I've never seen one episode.
Are you interested in it? Can I convince you that you're missing out? It's going to take a huge amount of your time.
We remember what happened when I started binge-watching Bones, and it took over my life. I recently binge-watched the first season of This Is Us, and it makes me really sad watching it.
I've heard
really
a ton of people, no matter how I'm glad you brought that up, no matter how steely and serious they take themselves, who are a puddle by the end.
I'm a mess.
But is it diseases? Is it relationships breaking? What is it?
It's life,
It's
Greg,
life?
Because this is us.
I cry. You know me. I'm a sensitive male figure of some sort.
I'm in a tricky spot because I love the show, but it makes me feel really sad. So, especially with this weather. I need to watch this week's episode, and it's raining today.
I don't.
I'm going to be in a bad mood on air tonight. Start crying.
That's what we want to see. We want tension. Anchor tension. Yeah. That's going to be good.
Anyway, I digress.
There's a house in Albuquerque that Walter White, the teacher turned meth kingpin, was...
Brian Cranston?
Was a resident of, in his character was. And there's a critical scene when he's so upset, he gets kicked out of the house by his wife, because, you know, he's a meth dealer and all that.
Right.
That he throws, he brought a pizza, like as a conciliatory gesture, and he's so upset, he throws an entire pizza onto the roof, and then he climbs up and he's trying to get the pizza off the roof, but it's stuck there. What's happening is that house is now owned by someone else, but people keep driving past the house in Albuquerque and throwing pizzas onto the roof. So when you buy a famous house, like there was this awful house in Silence of the Lambs where Jodie Foster walked in and there was the serial killer, and that thing had a tough time. The owner had a tough time selling it afterwards because for tourist reasons it was kind of creepy, and he didn't find his resale value was strong by that. But this woman who owns the house says she loses count of how many people come and just drive by. But in the last month, 6 pizzas have been found on the roof now that people have discovered. And now it's, an online thing where people think it's cool to do
so they do it more.
And
I wonder if this family that owns the house had any idea or had ever watched the show, because then that would be even more confusing. It's like 2017. Is egging out? Egging's not cool anymore.
That's right.
It's now.
That's right. Trick or treat.
Yeah.
This is not an egg thing. When we moved into our neighborhood, we had eggs thrown at our house randomly, like 3 days into living there, and we're like, oh my goodness! Like we thought this was, and it's never happened since. It was like a high school. School is starting. I think kids get together, and I think they hit all the houses behind the park. But I'm ready for them now.
I think we need to get out of here. I don't think we're picking it up on our mics, but they're tearing down.
There's construction.
Store.
This may be the last. It won't be the last podcast. This may be the last podcast in this studio.
A new
home to talk about pizza and eggs. Our thanks to Arlo White. Our thanks to David Amber. You can see him this week on Hockey Night in Canada, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on Sportsnet.ca/590.